We have not yet discussed at all the central issue in the Mishnah about Hefsek and Kriya Shema, which is a fascinating sugya, and which has a lot to be said about it, but we'll hold off until the bottom of Yud Gimel Amud Beis, when the Gemara is going to return to it. So we'll talk about it there. So in between now and then, we have a couple of other passages which we'll probably try to look at, for the most part, relatively quickly, so that we can get through to other topics. Although there are some important tangential issues which we'll try to look at a little bit, particularly today. So first of all, today, if you look at the Gemara in Daf Gimel Amud Aleph, after the Kavana line, so the Gemara begins a new passage. So it's Tana Rabbanan, Kriya Shema Kichsava, Divrei Rabbi. So Kriya Shema has to be as it is written, which apparently means B'lashon HaKodesh. There are a couple of significances that could be imputed to the word Kichsava as it's written, which, by the way, may also be relevant to the Mishnah, because it may be that that itself is why there is, at least from a starting point, an Itzer of Hefsek. The idea that maybe we shouldn't interrupt in Kriya Shema under normal circumstances may, as we'll discuss, be a function of the fact that there is a din that it should be recited as written. And if you're going to break every few lines to talk to your friend, that's not as written. So here the Gemara, at least according to Rabbi utilizes this word to convey that it should be B'lashon HaKodesh. And as you see, that's the dominant position of halacha that can be recited in any language. So my time with the Rabbi, what is Rabbi's reason for saying what he says? Kra. I'm sorry, that's a good point. My time with the Rabbi, I'm a kra v'hayu b'havyasin yu. Because the pasuk says v'hayu, it should be as it is. Rabbanan, my time ayu, and what is Rabbanan's reason? Amar kra shma v'chalashon sha'ata shemeya. So the Rabbi Nami haksev shma, so the Rabbi also has the word shma. How we buy, he needs that for a different reason. Excuse me. Hashmeya l'aznecha ma sha'ata motzi mipicha. That you should make your ears hear that which your mouth expresses. So you see that the word Shema has the same dual meaning here that it has in English. Right? In English, you use the word here, so it could mean simply in terms of volume, do your ears reach to the words I'm saying, reach your ears? And it also means, do you hear me? Do you understand what I'm saying? I hear what you're saying. So that dual language that we find in English, in a fascinating way, we find the Gemara has that same dual possibilities within Shema, possibilities within Shema, that Shema could be used to mean you have to hear what you're saying, you have to speak loudly enough so that you can hear your words, the literal translation of the word here, or it could also be used, as it is in English also, to mean understand. And therefore, if the Torah emphasizes Shema, so it's saying l'kula, so to speak, that since it's based on understanding, so whatever language you understand, kolash and shata shomeya, here clearly the word shomeya is being used to mean understand, one could hear any language in the world, you won't know what it's saying, but one can physically, one who is able to hear, can hear any language that exists. So we say kolash and shata shomeya, we mean in the sense of understanding, so that's perhaps the usage here as well, that you can fulfill shema in any language. So now the Gemara has to keep track of how one can have one opinion, one can have the other opinion. So Rabbanan Savril who command Amar Lohi Shmila Azna Yatza. So Rabbanan who used the word Shema to mean that you can say it in any language because anything that you're able to hear, so how do they derive the halacha of you have to be Mashmila Azna? So they don't have that halacha. They hold that one who is not able to hear what he's saying is still Yotze. So what do they do about the fact that their Kriya Shema also has the words Vahayu, which has been interpreted to mean that the words have to be as written in Lashon HaKodesh. So Hahu Mibayelu Shul Yikur L'Mafreya. So this you need that you should read
it out of order.
Right, not retroactively as it sometimes means, but although we discussed last week in the Kriya Shema retroactively, right? If you said Shema before the Zman is over, because you're worried that the Shul won't get to it in time, you could do it with conditional Kavana maybe, so it will come out that you read Shema retroactively in halachic sense. That's not what the word L'Mafreya means here. It means that you shouldn't read it out of order. So you might think that you can read the Sukkim any order you want. So no, the Hayu has to be in the order that it is. Thank you very much. Rabbi, Shul Yikul Mafreya Manalei Nafkalei. So then we have to account for Rabbi. So this idea that you can't go out of order, how does he know that? He knows that Mitvarim Hadvarim. Rabbanan Dvarim Hadvarim Odarshi, and Rabbanan don't find that to be significant for the purposes of a drasha. So a member of the Sava Rabbi Dechalatara Kula B'cholashin Nemra. So apparently Rabbi feels, by contrast, that if Rabbi's opinion is that Kriyashma has to be Dav Kabbalashin HaKodesh, and that's derived from a pasuk, so that shows you that it's special, it's different from the rest of the Torah. So Kol Torah Kula, the rest of the Torah, is in any language. If you're going to tell me that the sin of Lashon HaKodesh applies to Kol Torah Kula, so V'hayu, D'chasav Rechmon Alamali, so what do I need the V'hayu for? So maybe you need it because it says Shema, so Shema is a counterbalance. And therefore, maybe that would have put Shema in a different category, so maybe you need Hayu in order to bring it back. So remember, the Sav Rabbanan, the Chol HaTorah Kula, the Lashon HaKodesh Nemra. So then it could come out that Rabbanan hold that Chol HaTorah Kula is Dav Kab Lashon HaKodesh. Disak Adaitach B'Chol Lashon Nemra Shema Tekasa Rechman Alamali. Because if you're going to tell me that it could be said in any language, so then what's unique about Shema in this context? Same kind of structure that maybe you would have thought that Shema is an exception. Maybe the second pasuk, the second word, is coming to tell you that it's not an exception. Okay, so fine. So we have this rather brief passage. So we get a much longer one a little bit later on. We'll have to make a decision how much time to devote to it. But here, the Gemara spends some time trying to straighten out these two opinions. How do you have each opinion saying what it says in light of the fact that the other one's going to have to account for the missing drasha, so to speak. But this leads to a very major side topic, which we'll probably spend some time today trying to talk about. What did that last line of the Gemara just mean? Like that contrasting Shema and the rest of the Torah in terms of Lashon HaKodesh. So what does it mean to say that the rest of the Torah has to be Lashon HaKodesh or does not have to be Lashon HaKodesh? It means for purposes of Shir, for Talmud Torah. So right now we're involved in Talmud Torah. Do we have a din that has to be Lashon HaKodesh? Is there a drasha telling us that we don't have to speak Lashon HaKodesh? What are we talking about when we say Kol Torah Kula? And so we know Shema we're mechuyav to say twice a day. So we have dinim about how to say it. So what does it mean when it compares and contrasts to Kol Torah Kula? So this is a major issue. Because what is the first thing that comes to mind? Waiting. Right? And indeed, that's what Rashi sounds like. Not over here, but in Maseches Megillah. But Tosfos quotes the Rashi in Megillah, and Daf Zayin Amud Beis, that the reference is Likros BaTorah, which probably means laning. You could have just said to just study the Torah like we just alluded to a second ago, but let's assume it means laning. So what's the problem with saying that it means laning, as intuitive as that is?
It's not Deraisa.
It's not Deraisa. Right? So laning, Pashtus, is an institution, Midrabanan. We'll see, there's a couple of tangents we could get into from here. Have to figure out how much of it we want to get into. These are very relevant tangents, but we have to figure out how much to pursue it because it's a little bit a side topic. But since laning is not a din min haTorah, so how could this Gemara be talking about that And that's what Pshukim means. How could the Gemara be interpreting a pasuk to tell us this is a din if its only implication is for a halacha that's not Daraisa? So that's what we'll have to talk about for a second. So where exactly does Lainey come from, just to clarify? So the Gemara associates it both with Moshe Rabbeinu and with Ezra. A few stages of the Takana, Lainey on Shabbos, Lainey during the week, Lainey three Pesukim, Lainey four Pesukim, a couple of stages about how the Takana developed. But it's associated first with Moshe Rabbeinu and then with Ezra, which should make it a Din Rabbanan. Now, one might argue, well, listen, Moshe Rabbeinu, didn't he give us the whole rest of the Torah? Didn't he give us the Dinim Daraisa? So, yes, but we also assume that in his secondary job, he was a rabbi, and Moshe Rabbeinu. So, he had two roles. He had a role of conveying to us the Torah itself, but he was also a rabbinic leader. So, if he innovated a policy on his own, so that's a Din Drabanan, even though it's contemporaneous with the Torah itself. So that's the general assumption. There is a Bach, where the Bach sounds like he refers to the institution of Kriyas HaTorah as Daraisa, based on Moshe's role, and others comment it's very difficult, that the Pashta says if it's not from the Chumash itself, but Moshe Rabbeinu is instituting it, so that's called the Din D'Rabbanan. Shavu Brachos Na'avelus is also associated with Moshe Rabbeinu. And it's also assumed that those dinim are dinim d'rabbanan, that they're not d'raisa just because they came from the rabbi who conveyed to us the Torah as well. So it's difficult, as Tosfos asks, to say that this is reference to the Torah itself. So Tosfos says, "Alone here, the Ezra Tikkun Kriyas HaTorah." And so it doesn't make sense to say that these pesukim are referring to Lainey, because that's the institution of Ezra in its current form. And before Ezra came along, why would we need the pasuk v'hayu then? What would the pasuk come to tell us before Ezra came along? The question is formulated in a little bit of a difficult way, because Moshe Rabbeinu did have Kriyas HaTorah before Ezra, so to say, what do we need it for before Ezra? There is an institution of Kriyas HaTorah before Ezra. Now, again, it's still difficult to go further and to say that means it's a Daraisa. We still have the same problem. But the specific formulation of saying before Ezra came along, what relevance did this have? That's not really hitting it either, because there was Kriyas HaTorah before Ezra, but at the same time, still the question is still a true question. What's the pasuk referring to?
What was the Kriyas HaTorah before Ezra?
So Moshe Rabbeinu did institute Kriyas HaTorah on some level. The Gemara in different places, you have to see how much you want to get into it. The Gemara in different places traces Kriyas HaTorah as a progression in terms of how many times a week and how, what were the minimum requirements for Kriyas HaTorah. And the Gemara dashes in one place the pasuk in Parshas B'Shalach, that you can't go 3 days without water. That water was a reference to Torah, and that's why we lay in at least a maximum of a 3 day interval between Kriyas HaTorah is Monday, Thursday, and Shabbos. Right? That's our cheer schedule, we know. So that idea goes, there was Kriyas HaTorah before Ezra. So the question is formulated in a little bit of a difficult way to say before Ezra, what relevance does this have? But the question is still true, that to say the pasuk is referring to Kriyas HaTorah is still a difficult application. Satosa says as follows: Yishloma demayri beparshios hamchuyavim likros daraisa kemo parshos zacher. So one could say that this is a reference to the parshios that one is obligated to read in HaTorah, such as parshos zacher. Inami, or possibly a slightly different approach, Mikra Bikurim, Vidui Meiser, Parshas Chalitza, Shemitzvah Torah Lekrosan, Afalpike B'chalosh and Nemra, B'sinai, Shekol Dibor V'dibor Shayot, and Pekarsh Baruch Hu Haimus Chalik V'shivim Lashon. So Tosfos says a couple of different things here. Tosfos says, every line of this Tosfos one could analyze and one could go off on a tangent for, so we probably won't devote all the time that this Tosfos could merit, but just to sketch out what some of the ideas are within this Tosfos. So if we first saw just the question of what is the status of a normal Kriyas HaTorah that we have, is that Daraisa, Drabanan, or somewhere in between? That's one issue that one could talk about. Then we see Tosfos identifying a certain Kriyas HaTorah which they assume is Daraisa, Parsha Zachar. Then Tosus taking a slightly different tack and saying that there are other times when we're mechuyev to say something. It's not waning, but we are mechuyev to say psukim, and we give these examples of Vidui Meiser and the Chalitza and the like. And then it kind of says within that context, you could have said, okay, fine, so it applies to the Parsha of Chalitza and the Parsha of Bikurim and Vidui Meiser, which means that when there's an obligation to recite these psukim, they could be recited in any language. But then Tosfos adds something else, which is a reference to Gemara Masach HaShabbos and Daf Peches, where the Gemara talks about the way the Torah was given. So Tosfos goes on here to say that B'chaloshin Nemra B'sinat, that not just that we have license to recite it in different languages, but that when the Torah was given, it was given in such a way that all of the languages that are going to exist and that exist were conveyed at the time of the giving of the Torah. The Torah was given in such a way that the words contained all their different languages, which is a whole different level of meaning to this idea of a chaloshin, and it's implying that that is why it's okay to do it in other languages, which is not the only way to understand this concept. Now, we could understand this concept as meaning that we focus on the concepts more than the words, and therefore if the concepts are expressed in different languages, it doesn't matter. We don't have to trace it back necessarily to how it was given at Sinai, but here Tosfos puts that into this context as well. So this assumption, maybe we'll speak for a few minutes about Zachar, because it's a topic of particular relevance. So here Tosfos is expressing the attitude that we often express. The Shabbos before Purim, so we tell everybody, even if you never come to shul, this is a time when you have to come to shul, this is a time when all the women have to come to shul, we'll make a special Kriyas HaTorah and the like, to make sure that everyone can come. Because Zachar is Daraisa. So that's an interesting discussion of itself. Clearly the mitzvah Zechiras HaMalek is Daraisa. And that much we know, the Torah says, Zachar is Asher HaSalach HaMalek. We'll read it in a few weeks in Parshas Kisete. So there is such a mitzvah in the Torah, that seems to be pretty clear. The idea that the Kriyas HaTorah that we have in Shul before Purim is therefore Mitzvah Min HaTorah, we have to fill in a few steps in order to... So the truth is, you only find this idea expressed in a handful of Rishonim. Tosfos here, and Tosfos in Megillah, seem to express this idea that laning Zachar as it did Min HaTorah. Because it's not clear the pasuk means to lane it. Maybe the pasuk means to remember it in some other way. Now the Gemara does reject the possibility that you could just think it. Maybe you might think, alright, so if I just remember a malik mentally, so that's enough. So the Gemara Megillah says, Yachol Belev, you might think that if I remember a malik in my heart, that's enough. Talmud Lomar, Lusishko. Since the Torah says, remember and don't forget, that dual language tells us that it has to be out loud. So we know we have to speak it. But to say that it has to be spoken, the Kriyas HaTorah, with a minyan, on that Shabbos, so there are many steps to get to that. So the idea of the minyan, that's expressed, let's say, in two other Rishonim. It's interesting, in both cases, it's evoked kind of agav, you know, it comes up because other issues were being raised, and it's a good question what happened if those other issues weren't raised. But later on in the Seches Brachos there's a rush that comments that Rabbi Elazar had a great need for a minyan, so the rush seems to say, there's some debate if the rush meant this, seems to say that because of the mitzvah of Zachar Min HaTorah, because a minyan normally is not needed on the level Min HaTorah, right? As important as a minyan is, we rarely have a situation where a minyan is relevant to a mitzvah d'oraisa. Minyanim are generally relevant to d'rabbanan, to tefillah v'tzibur, to kriyas haTorah in the normal sense. Kaddishes are all, at most, d'rabbanan. So we rarely find a mitzvah d'oraisa that requires a minyan. Do we ever find a mitzvah d'oraisa that requires a minyan? So So it sounds like from the Rush that, yeah, the reference is to Zohar. Some debate if he meant it or not, if that's what he was referring to, if there's a typo perhaps involved. But the question of how whether the text is being read correctly is somewhat of a discussion. But this is really the prominent marker for this idea that we need a minion in our Torah for Zohar. That is really the Rush in Brachas. There's also a So there's also a Trumas Hadashin, which also refers to this Rush. The Trumas Hadashin was once asked by somebody. Somebody said that I live in a town where there's no minion, but I'm going to go to a town where there is a minion in order to hear the Megillah on Purim. And the question was asked, once I'm doing that, since I'm going to go to this town for Purim, should I also go for the Shabbos beforehand, so I'll be there for Zohar as well? And the Tzadashan responded, yes, not only should you go there for the Shabbos beforehand, but it's more important to go there for Shabbos than it is to go there for Purim. Because Megillah, you actually don't need a minion for Bismana. When you hear the Megillah on Purim itself, you don't need a minion. But for Parsha Zohar, you need to have a minion. So it's actually not only important, but it's more important that you should go there for Shabbos than you should go there for Purim. So this is where we find such an idea, chiyuv of a minion for Parsha Zohar. And the other Rishonim didn't seem to agree. Other Rishonim, the Rambam in his commentary to Kiseitze, the Rambam in Mishneh Torah. It sounds like from the Rambam in Mishneh Torah that all of the Dalet Parshios are of equal stature. They're all the Rabbanim. That there isn't anything unique about Parsha Zohar as compared to the other three Parshios. The Rambam sounds like that as well. So this was really a little bit of a debate as to whether or not this is true. And then Kriyas HaTorah as well. Once we say it's a minion, okay, so maybe I should need a Kriyas HaTorah, but that's, that seems to be our assumption, which is perhaps derived from these Tosfosin as well. There was some discussion, well, maybe we don't need a Kasher Kriyas HaTorah, maybe it doesn't have to have all the requirements, maybe we don't have a Makor for that. That Rav Sternbach has a tshuva about, and Marashag has a tshuva about, that wasn't accepted that there should be any leniencies in terms of what the Sefer Torah is up to, whether it's a kosher Sefer Torah or not. The Poskim didn't really accept any leniencies in that area, and they assumed that you need to have a kosher Sefer Torah and a leaning with a kosher Sefer Torah betzibur in order to fulfill the mitzvah of Parsha Zohar on a level Minat Torah. So there are some who suggest that the idea of the Sefer Torah is derived from the Pasuk So zos zikaron b'sefer, that the zikaron of a malik should be b'sefer, should be through a sefer Torah, so it has to be linked. And the idea of a minion, some point out to the fact that there is presumably a connection between zikiras amalik and melchemas amalik. They're presumably tied into each other, that we remember a malik in order to fight a malik. So the mitzvah of Melchemes HaMalek is not an individual mitzvah, but it's a mitzvah on the tzibur as a whole. So it's a common old kind of concept. So presumably the mitzvah of Zechiras HaMalek is connected to that and should be done the tzibur. So that's the general assumption. So then if that's the case, we still haven't really explained why it has to be what it is. So then let's do Zechiras HaMalek today. Let's do Zechiras HaMalek every day. Let's every day have a special Kriyas HaTorah for. Yeah, so Parsha Kiseitze we're already doing. Let's fulfill it with that. But maybe we should be laning Zechiras HaMalek every day. I mean, it's not clear from the Torah when this should be performed. I find that other places also. For example, the Rambam tradition in regards to Tefillah. The Rambam holds that Tefillah. Daily tefillah is a mitzvah min haTorah. He has a minority opinion in this case, even though he has a good raya. The Gemara does sound like that there is such a concept of tefillah min haTorah. The problem is, even if you acknowledge that there is a concept of tefillah min haTorah, so how do you decide that it's going to be every day? The Torah doesn't say every day. So the Kiryas Melech discusses that, Kiryas Sefer, excuse me, discusses that if you have a mitzvah that's not spelled out, So you have to have some system to figure out how often it applies. So either it applies once in a lifetime, or it applies every day. Those are two viable options. So how do we get to Zechira Samah like once a year? Sorry?
Mitishkach.
So if it seems to come from Los Tishkach, we shouldn't forget. So how did that tell us?
Isn't the idea of 12, there's something about 12 months and forgetting,
yes.
The first year of Eilus and...
Yeah, so there's an idea. It's associated with the Chassam Sofer. It's not 100% clear that Chassam Sofer and his Chuvus necessarily seems to be agreeing with this, but the Talmud and Maram Shik, for example, have this idea associated with the Chassam Sofer that, as you correctly point out, that it's connected to the idea of Osishkach, that the Torah says not to forget a Malik, to remember and don't forget. So the assumption was that there is a Shir Shikha, that there's a certain period of time when you start to forget things. So if the Torah says don't forget, that's cluing you in, don't let the Shir Shikha pass, don't let the amount of time pass when you could come to forget. So what is the Shir Shikha? So he assumes that it's 12 months. Where do you get that from? So as you mentioned, one place is the idea that the Gemara says in Maseches Brachos, connected to Avelos, that Ein HaMeis Mishtakeach Min Alev Ela Achayud Beit Chodesh, that one who passes away does not begin to get forgotten until after 12 months. And there's also a Gemara in the second paragraph above Metziah. We talk about returning lost property, and Yeyush, a person gives up hope of getting back his property. So the Gemara says that Stam Yeyush, after 12 months, a person goes 12 months without getting his property back, he's going to give up on it. So these are two passages which seem to support this idea of the Shir Shikha, that there is this period of time after which you start to forget. So then the next step is, okay, so then we have to have Zechiras HaMalek once a year in order to avoid having the Shir Shikha elapse, in order to avoid having a 12-month pass from one point to the next. So then there were those, this is again discussed in the Maram Shik, and again you have to figure out how it fits in with the Chassam Sofer, but still associated with the Chassam Sofer's Yesod, that says, so then we have a problem called leap years. You have a leap year, so a leap year inserts an extra month just when you don't need it, right? A month right before the second Kriyas of Amalek, a month right before Adar is inserted. So there's going to be 13 months in between one Kriyas Amalek and the other Kriyas Amalek. So then there are those who suggest, okay, in such a year, like you said, Parshas Kiseitse, maybe you should have Kavana to be Yotze then, because that's going to keep, otherwise we're going to have a problem of 13 months passing from one Zechira to another. And there's a whole discussion of Sipes Achrank, the Shuvah, others discuss. So then what do we mean? We say you have to have Kavana for that reading in Kiseitse. Does the Baal Kore have to be aware of it? Does he have to have Kavana to be Motzi people? What exactly is required Kavana in terms of that mitzvah of Zechira? So that's a little bit of an open question, but that's how some suggest. And others suggest that even if we sign on to this whole idea, leap year doesn't affect it. That we say Beis Chodesh, we don't mean exactly 12 months without any type of flexibility. It means a cycle of a year, which is generally 12 months. But if the cycle takes 13 months to finish, so then that'll also be this year. Now what we mean is we were saying that when you have a cycle of a year, so then things restart every time you get to the next point. So when Hanukkah comes, you start forgetting what happened before the previous Hanukkah. When you hit that point in the cycle, so you need to be refreshed about things that were before that point the previous year. But if the cycle took 13 months, so then that's not going to radically change things. It's still going to be the same basic structure. So it's a question to what extent to worry about that so much. And then there were others who didn't accept this whole idea of the Shir Shikha, the Satmar Rav has a tshuva, others have a tshuva, that they don't think this is necessarily the case, that there is such a concept. Say both of the rayas that we mentioned a few minutes ago are somewhat questionable. So, for example, to say that the person who passes away in a meis mishtakech ma'alei ve'lachiyud beis chodesh, what does that mean? It means that a person who's trying to get past his loss, so after 12 months, after trying to move on, it starts to work. It doesn't mean that if you have a mitzvah to remember something, that you're going to forget after 12 months. It means that when you're trying to move on, you'll start having some success after 12 months. Or the Gemara about Yeish, after 12 months, doesn't say that you forgot about the property. It says that you give up hope of getting it back. Maybe you remember it very well, you just don't think it's going to come back to you. So it's not clear that these rayas are such slam dunk rayas. So there are those who understood, like the Magen Avraham seems to say, that the Chazal instituted the mitzvah should be performed in connection with Purim. So because of their thematic relevance on Malach and Purim, so we have a mitzvah performed before Purim, but not that it necessarily has this yearly structure, or nobody would necessarily say that Minhag Torah had to be that week. So that's itself a question. So when we announce in Shul that the Mechliyev is to come now specifically Minhag Torah, we have to figure out if all those assumptions are true. Is it true that you have to hear laning of Zachar in order to fulfill the mitzvah? And then it's a bigger leap to say that it's true you have to do it that day. There's also a discussion that Magen Avraham and Mishneh Berurah argued about does it have to be the Kiseisei Psukim, or could it also be the B'Shalach Psukim? So then if you come to Shul on Purim and they lean from B'Shalach, so that should also work maybe. So that's a discussion as well, whether or not we're committed specifically to that text. So once you say that it could be any day of the year, so presumably this mitzvah is not a mitzvah sasei shazman grama. So it makes sense, one would think, to say that women and men are equally obligated in this mitzvah of Zechiras HaMalek. And that's again why the announcement is often made that the women should also make a point to get to shul, and we make an extra Kriya Satorah sometimes. That's a little bit controversial as well. Sometimes there's an extra Kriya Satorah scheduled in order to accommodate the women who aren't able to come in the morning.
But you're saying though that the idea behind the communal reading is based on the melchama aspect of it. Women aren't chayav in the melchama aspect.
So that's the machashas. So the question is that the Sefer Achinuch says that women are patur. And we don't know why he says that, because since it doesn't seem to be a mitzvah say shazman grama, so it's not clear why women should be patur. So there is a whole essay in the Machashas that you're mechaving to that suggests, based on that, that maybe it's connected to Mulchama, and if Zechira is tied into Mulchama, so then maybe women should be patur for that reason. So that's a very controversial topic in of itself, because it's not so clear that that's true. It's a very controversial topic, as long as that. In the past 60 years, Gius Bonos and the whole question of drafting women into the Israeli army, a very, very controversial topic. The marker that women are not involved in the army is kind of agav from the Gemara in the beginning of Kiddushin, has the expression Darach Ha'ish Leiseis Melchama Ve'Ein Darker Shalisha Lesses Melchama. So it's the style, it's the way of a man to go out to war, not the way of a woman. But from a halachic perspective, it's somewhat debatable, because the Mishnah says in Soto that for a Mechamis Mitzvah, everyone goes out for a Mechamis Mitzvah, filu kala mechupasa is the language of the Mishnah. Okay. So it's a whole discussion. So Mechamis HaMalek presumably is a Mechamis Mitzvah. So to say women are exempt from Mechamis HaMalek is not 100% so easy to say. So it's a little bit of a difficult question whether or not this is true. So there is a whole ongoing debate, which is not 100% clarified today, whether or not women actually are exempt or obligated in Amalek. And it's brought down from Rav Nassan Adler, it was Rabbi Chaim Sofer, that he was very makbid that everyone in his household, men and women alike, would hear Amalek. And others debated whether or not this is true based on the Sefer Achinuch, somewhat of an open question. So based on that, there are those who object to the practice that some shuls have of having an additional Kriya Satorah for the women if it's not clear that they're obligated. So then it's a question whether it's a justifiable Kriya Satorah. I think there is a tzad to say that it should be justifiable either way, because even if Klapei Shmaya Galia, even if Kodesh Baruch Hu, nobody could tell us that women are really potter, but if the motivation is a suffix mitzvah d'oraisa, if the possibility is that they're mechuyavos, so then that's a better justification for laning than we normally have. When we lay on a normal Monday or Thursday or Shabbos, so as we started off, we're fulfilling a mitzvah d'rabbanan. So here you at least are trying to fulfill a mitzvah d'oraisa. It might be that it turns out that it's actually not obligatory, that maybe women are pater, but the motivation is to fulfill a mitzvah d'oraisa seems to be at least as good a motivation as we have for taking out a Torah every other time we take out the Torah. So I think there's a lot of justification for such a kriyas haTorah. But that gets into the whole question. So what exactly is this Tosfos telling us when this Tosfos says that the Pasuk, the interpreting the words Daraisa, could mean something? It could mean Zechira Samalik. There are other mysteries that are hidden within this Tosfos and within this concept. So maybe we'll say a few more words about this tomorrow morning, and then we'll try to move on a little bit into the rest of the Gemara. Shkarech, it should be a wonderful day. The post Tisha B'Av season should be one of Nechama and Geula. It should be only good things.
Seems to imply that.